We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit MTE.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better.
Since
1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years.
Since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us this morning, we have Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey. How are you this morning?
Doing good. How are you, Scott?
I'm good. So it sounds like it was a fairly uneventful, somewhat quiet, maybe, Thanksgiving?
Yeah, not too bad. Your typical stove or oven smoking kind of scare calls, but no deep frying turkey accidents I know of as of right now.
That's good.
Yes.
I guess some people, though, they wait for Thanksgiving until all the family can get together, which could be tonight even.
Yes, even tonight, yeah.
Each year, it does seem like we hear about on national news, there's some kind of turkey frying catastrophe.
Yes, always. You hear of one or see one on the news, but you know, I think it's gotten more popular. People are learning more how to do it, because you know, 10 years ago you heard nothing about somebody deep frying a turkey, but now with all the information out there and safety tips, it's getting better.
What else kinds of things did you guys respond to over the holidays?
We had several wrecks over the holidays out on the interstate, you know, probably due to the traffic, you know, people traveling, a couple serious accidents. That's typical. A lot of medical calls, you know, a lot of people, I think, sometimes may overeat and it gets to them. And we've made some calls like that, you know, just everyday routine calls that you make all the time. They still go on also.
You hear about overeating, but what about things like over drinking? Is that an issue around Thanksgiving, or is that more of a New Year's type issue?
Well, I mean, people do get out and celebrate in certain ways, but I don't know of any calls that we had like that. We do have them from time to time. That's usually a police call. But, you know, if it turns into a medical call or a situation, we do respond. But we do make several calls where alcohol is involved.
I feel like the over-drinking thing, that's usually not around Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving, it does seem more family-oriented than any other
one. You know, it's Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, it's kind of like I forget what they call it, like a day to go out and drink. I saw something on the news about the bars in Nashville were preparing for that night. You know, a lot of people coming in town with family want to get out on Wednesday night and the next day celebrate Thanksgiving.
It's their day off the next day,
yes,
so they
exactly.
Feel like, sleep a little bit later. I can sleep this one off.
Yeah, sleep it off and get up and eat a big dinner.
That's right. I don't, that sounds like a bad combo. Right?
It does.
The older I get, the more it sounds more horrible. I don't know why. But anyway, now one of the wrecks you responded to, you said the vehicle caught on fire.
Yes, I think it was a single vehicle accident that run off the interstate somewhere around the 74-75 mile marker, ended up flipping upside down. I'm not sure if he got out on his own or had some assistance from bystanders or whatever, and the vehicle caught on fire. Of course, you know, when we arrived on the scene, we was getting reports that he was still in the car until we got on the scene, and he was only patient, not too bad, badly injured. He was transported, but of course, the vehicle's total loss.
I guess in a lot of cases, seatbelts really do make a difference.
Oh, they do, for sure.
Do you see as much as maybe you used to people who are bystanders pulling folks out of cars and stuff?
You have a few people that will help, but it seems now that more people just rather call it in and keep going. We can kind of judge by that. A lot of times when our dispatchers giving us information, how many people are calling in, you know, with the cell phones, and you get bits of information like, well, they just drove by and that, you know, they saw it, they didn't stop, or they heard the accident, but people don't have a tendency to try to help as much as they used to. I think with the cell phones, they think they've done their duty to call it in. So
you know, it seems like up around maybe year 2000 is when that kind of ended. I remember a time where people would definitely stop no matter how big the wreck was.
For sure. You'd always have people stop and want to lend a hand in some way. And we appreciated that, or still do in certain situations, but a lot of times people when they're trying to help out, don't really know what damage they could do by trying to help out and stuff. You know, it's always, if someone has a car wreck, you got to get them out of the car quick as you can. And the car may still be safe to be in. Yeah. And the best thing to do is leave them there until we can get them medical attention. So it's just people trying to help. It's not really trained in that. And we do appreciate the people doing that. But cars nowadays, they're so safe, the technology that goes in them. Not to say we still don't have serious wrecks, but a car can take a pretty good lick now, and the people not hurt bad.
Usually, cars don't just burst into flames.
Usually not. Talking about the technology in cars, that fire safety in that is a big factor. I mean, used to, you would have cars years ago catch on fire because of carburetors, you know, backing up. Now, all cars are pretty much fuel injected. That's all enclosed in those injectors. So you just don't have that. And usually if you do, it's something to do with electrical issue or something has happened to the fuel system.
Hopefully that is not something you see every day.
Yes, correct. The big worry now is electrical cars, yeah. You know, with the batteries catching on fire.
You were talking about that before and how those types of fires that are electric vehicles, they just continue to burn.
Correct. They produce their own oxygen in those batteries to keep burning, and it's hard to put them out. And there's still a lot of things coming down the line, you know, how to fight these fires, how to put them out. I was watching a video the other day. It had a electrical car in a dumpster that was on fire, and it was still burning under the water, and the water was boiling. So it's not a lot you can do. And they do say that the best thing when one catches on fire like that is just to let it burn up. It's a lot cleaner to burn that way and then try to put it out, then have to do the cleanup.
And that's a hot fire too.
Yes, I mean, very, that's, very,
yeah,
very hot.
If you got water boiling on top of all the other issues.
Yes, you know, it's basically burning underwater.
That's a little tough to deal with.
Yes, it is.
Now, on the interstate, what is a typical accident that you'll see happen?
Most of them are just little fender benders, like especially on Fridays. The traffic backs up, or any day on the interstate, people getting off at the exits. I don't know if it's because of cell phones or whatever, but you have a little fender bender. Your more wrecks that have injuries in them are usually somebody, you know, maybe falling asleep at a high speed, or like we talk about, alcohol maybe, or even the, how you've seen it, people, how they drive just crazy,
yeah,
real fast and in and out of lanes, and they clip a bumper, and you know, those kind of wrecks may take out 3 or 4 cars.
Wow.
So
hey, and then you have those, I guess, where somebody's on their cell phone not paying attention, traffic stopped in front of you.
Yes, that happens a lot.
Those a lot. Usually look really bad.
They do. And then going back to the safety of the cars, you know, they look bad, the cars tore it, but they're engineered to give like that, to take the impact so you don't take the impact. So I've seen some cars really tore up pretty bad to where people just get out. It's like, I can't believe this car tore up this bad, you know, and they're walking around looking at it. So.
Yeah. How many of the folks that you see after a car wreck, how many of them are in shock? You know, maybe they shouldn't be up and walking around.
Yeah, well, it happens. You know, most people, when they have a wreck, that may be their first one. They don't know what to do. You know, you got your car, and everybody, you know, likes their car, and it's like, oh, it's tore all the pieces down. It's a big investment. But I have seen some wrecks that are kind of bad, and people be injured and be out walking around and really not, you know what they're doing at the time. I've seen a few of those.
I saw one on Broad Street, and this was years and years ago, where the guy flipped over and half his arms look like it was missing, or you know, the guy's out walking around, you know.
Yes.
Obviously he has no clue what's going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. I've worked a wreck years ago where the driver had broke their ankle, and it was some they had something in them, you know.
Yeah.
They were obviously impaired, but they were walking on the end of their leg and didn't
wow.
know it. And it was like, oh, it was just killing me to see it. It's like, you know, she got out of the car, thought she was fine,
yeah,
and then started walking around, and her foot was completely on the side, and she was walking on the end of her leg. So.
Man. Yeah, I guess that explains the shock factor.
Yes.
You're not feeling what you're
yeah.
what you should be feeling there.
Exactly.
Are the majority of calls that you guys respond to, are they wreck related, or would they be, you know, like medical at somebody's house?
Most of them are medical at people's houses. You know, of course, car wrecks, they make up a big majority of our calls, because you know, when someone calls in and says it looks bad, it's probably somebody injured, we're going to the wreck. Also, right now, this new technology with telephones, the impact on them, we're getting those. Sometimes it's where people drop their phone. I mean, that'll set it off too. But, you know, I'm not sure what the percentage is, but it's kind of high. When we do go on those calls, it is a wreck. Huh. We're having to work with our dispatch now, just trying to figure out how to respond to these calls because, you know, we had one the other day. We were responding to the wreck that was called in by the phone. And we get there and they find the phone on the side of the road. It had slid off somebody's car, and was able to return the phone to them. So it was, you know, but someone left their phone on the car, turned out the red light, and it slid off and hit the curb. And the impact, you know, thought it had been in a wreck.
That's wild. So, yeah. So the phone itself is dialing 911.
Yes, reporting a wreck.
Man, that's interesting.
It is. It's you know, it's a new technology that the smartphones have come out with, and it seems it's working good. There's a few little calls like that, you know. I know there's been people to maybe slam on the brakes, slide off in the floorboard and hit, that will call them in. But a large amount of the calls are actual wrecks.
So in those cases, is dispatch hearing just, you know, traffic driving by? I mean, is it like an open line?
I don't think that phone actually calls itself. It sets off something that sends a signal to our dispatch with its location, you know.
Okay.
And lets them know that it's a possible collision.
House fires and business fires, are those things happening less and less with new technology, with, you know, detection systems and so forth?
Well, it is, but you still have your old construction that sometimes when you have a fire there, you think, well, if this was new construction, this probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But new construction, when I say new and old construction, the building itself is safer, but people, when they bring their stuff in and occupy it, that causes a lot of your fires. You know, maybe what they're doing in there, what they're making, or how they're cooking in the house. You know, it doesn't matter if you're in a brand new house or a very old house. If you deep fry a turkey inside either one of them, you're gonna have trouble.
yeah.
So, but yes, new construction is a lot more safer, you know, with your electrical codes, fire codes, and all that. But we still have a fair amount of fires in each one of them.
You think we'll ever see a day where we do have sprinkler? I know we talked about that before. Sprinkler systems within, you know, all new residential homes.
I don't know. It was a few years ago. It was a big thing, and it kind of got put on the back shelf. Certain groups not really in favor of it. You know, it was the cost of it. Insurance was worried about the water damage of it. There are some cities, like Eagleville is one. I've mentioned that before. If you build a new home in Eagleville in the city limits, it's required to have a sprinkler system. Now, the factor of it is are you worried about, the insurance company, basically, are we going to have like four or five water damages, you know, that's going to cost more than a fire damage? You know, insurance does not like water in a house. And so that was a factor of the cost of putting them in, you know, up to, you know, a few more dollars a square foot to have. So there's a lot of factors in there. But I will say, sprinkler systems do save lives, you know, in the situations, but and they're required in all of our commercial, not all of them, but most commercial buildings here in town, and even anything over three stories, residential, like apartments, is required to have sprinkler systems. Now, I've been to several calls to where the sprinkler system went off, did what it was supposed to, maybe a fire in the kitchen or wherever, and you hear the maintenance guys like, man, the fire wasn't that bad, but this water is going to be ideal. But if someone had been in there, it would have saved their life.
Interesting. Yeah, when you start talking about adding, you know, $2, $3 even a square foot in addition to what you're already spending, that cost really goes up because houses are already so high, it seems like.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Even those who are moving here from other states who sold a house in California and were able to make $1 million on it, you know, yes. it still adds up quickly.
It does. Sure does.
Are you seeing bigger houses now?
Yes. You know, there's some subdivisions that's got houses, like when I was a kid, you'd call mansion,
yeah.
you know, and now you go back and look at these houses, like, they're huge.
6,000-7,000 square feet in size.
If not bigger.
Yeah.
You know, you've been here many years. It's like out on Highway 96, Franklin Highway, when the Swansons built that big house.
Yeah.
Everybody in town referred to it as the Swanson's Mansion.
Yeah.
And it was huge.
Yeah.
But now you can ride around town and go through a whole neighborhood that's got houses that size in it. So, you know.
It's crazy. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, because I remember the time where the average person out there, no matter what you did for a living, 1,500 square feet to 2,000 square feet was like max.
That was it.
You know,
I can, when I go through my neighborhood, my old neighborhood, I should say, it's like, there's my house. And we thought we had a big house in, and it's 2,100 square feet.
Yeah.
I still remember. And it just, ranch style, it looked like, as long as a football field looked like almost. But and you know, nowadays, 2,100 square feet is plenty of room.
Yeah. It is wild how things have changed when you look at stuff like that.
It is.
Even though it's more expensive these days, I don't know how people do it sometimes. Yeah,
I look at the downsize myself. You know, I'm not far from being an empty nester. It's like, why'd I need all this space? You know, just a one bedroom with a kitchen. That's about all you need.
Yeah. When the mortgage industry starts talking about the idea of a 50-year loan, you know, there's issues out there.
Yes. You know, I saw that on the news, and I went back and looked at some of the figures. You know, the example they used, it was only going to save like $200 a month for another 20 years. And it's like, that's don't really make a lot of sense. But
yeah.
You know,
because you're talking about, you know, still having a mortgage into your 70s, and I think most people, they want their house paid off by their 70s.
Yeah.
At least I would.
Yes, for sure.
That would be tough, because mortgages today, I mean, it's not uncommon for it to be over $2,500 a month.
Oh, I know. You know, when interest rates got real low back 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of people, well, I think that's what's hurting the market. People are sitting on these low interest loans and do not want to give it up for 6 or 7%, whatever it's at right now.
Yeah.
And it makes it tough.
Of course, 6% used to be considered extremely low.
Exactly. Back in the 70s and early 80s when it was 13-14%.
Yeah, it was like buying a house on a credit card.
Yeah.
but yeah, it was, because I remember everybody used to look at your loan was between 5-6%, and you thought that was amazing. And then all of a sudden we had this short time period, I say short, but maybe it was over a 4-year period, where home loans got down to around 3-4% for a long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then that kind of spoils everybody.
You're exactly right. My uncle, he was big in real estate and was talking about sales and stuff, and it's like how it was so good, then it backed off a little bit, and people like, oh, everything's slowing down. It's not good right now. It's like, it's good. It was great, but now it's back to good.
Yeah.
So this is normal here.
And then you have those who refinance every time it drops a percentage point, which I don't, that's another thing I don't understand, because then you're just continuing that whole process, meaning you're never going to pay off your house. Mm-hmm. It's scary. But when you look at things like fires, that's got to be tough when somebody's house is a total loss and they had just refinanced 2-3 years before. I mean, you're talking about a lot of loss.
Yeah, you know, of course, when we have a total loss or a big fire damage, we don't get into their personal finances on stuff unless it ends up being an arson case, which that's a whole total different thing. But hopefully everybody's got the insurance that they need to cover their house. And, you know, what was it, about 3 or 4 years ago, the insurance company sent stuff out saying you're underinsured.
Yeah.
It had to go up on the value of their houses or what they pay out. But it don't take a lot of fire to create a lot of expense to repair.
And things have gotten so expensive that if you forget to, all right, well, I'm going to refinance at this new rate and I'm going to borrow X amount of dollars. If you don't think about putting into place, all right, I'm going to increase my insurance, then you're up the creek.
Mm-hmm. Yes. When I got that from my insurance at first, you know, just the typical me is like, oh, they're trying to get more money out of it. But I started looking at the numbers. It's like, you know, when I first built my house, what I had it insured for, there's no way I could rebuild it now. So, you know, so I did have to up it.
It's wild how prices have gone up, though. And yeah, you're right. You know, in order to rebuild, to rebuy, you're going to have to not overinsure, but you're going to have to increase that rate every once in a while.
Yeah, I just recently and still in the middle of it, redoing some stuff on my house, and I had a budget for it. And it's like, I should have doubled this budget.
it's wild because labor's gotten higher too.
Oh, yes, yes.
But all of it has. Now, as far as the rating, the fire rating here in Murfreesboro, how big of a role does that play in the insurance market?
It's a big role. It's our ISO rating, and we're number one, which is the best. And it keeps your insurance down because the way the insurance company looks at that, it's like the fire department has an ISO rating of a one. So we know they can do this, this, and this, and how good they are. The chances of a house burning down because of the fire department, what I'm trying to say is, if it's a one, they know the chances are a whole lot less of that to happen if we were 7, 8, 9, or 10.
Yeah.
So that makes the insurance cheaper because that's unlikely that's going to happen as often in an ISO 1 rating as it would a lower one.
I don't think the average person realizes the impact of that until they maybe talk to a relative in a more rural area of Tennessee mm-hmm. and you see a fire in a more rural area. And that's when you realize, you know, some fire departments in these rural areas, they don't have many choices other than to let a house burn if there's no water supply.
That's true. That, you know, a lot of your rural areas are volunteer departments and they do the best they can do. But you may have someone sitting at the house, has to go to the station, pick up the truck, didn't respond who knows how far to the house, and it's so far gone when you get there. But, you know, then like a volunteer department like that, they may be somewhere where you have a 7, 8, 9, 10 ISO rating.
Yeah.
But here in Murfreesboro, you know, our response times is under 5 minutes. So there's part of the difference there, our water supply and stuff like that in the training that we have.
No matter where you are in the city, are you close enough to a fire hydrant for pretty much every house?
Yes. Our fire hydrants are 1,500 feet apart. So if you are pull up to a house and it's on fire, of course, we'll spot them and we know where they're at. You should be able to drive less than 1,500 feet and you'll find a hydrant.
So does that mean you have to carry 1,500 feet of hose as well?
Well, no, we carry about 1,000 feet of hose, just depending, because you're either going to be right there close to it, you know, and that's all we can carry, and that's what we're required to carry. So you look at it 1,500 feet apart, it's really, you should be within 750 feet of a hydrant either way.
Okay.
That's the way it's kind of figured.
Now, as far as adding, let's say, an ambulance service, I know that was up for discussion quite a few years ago.
Yes.
Is that something the city will ever look at doing again?
It's a possibility. I don't, you know, it may be years down the road, but there's some advantages and disadvantages of doing that, you know, so it's been discussed amongst ourselves, nothing about to happen or anything like that. But, you know, if the city were to implement an ambulance service, it's not going to happen in a year or two. It's going to take a while to do that.
I guess the upfront cost of that would be, of course, the ambulances. That would be the big one.
Yes. Then your personnel to run it. And, you know, the county has always been the EMS service, and you got to look how it's going to affect them. I mean, I think it's somewhere about 60-70% of the county's calls come within the city of Murfreesboro. So, you know, you're looking at taking half of their business or ever how you want to look at it away from them. So it's got a lot of a lot of things to work out for that to ever happen. And it's going to be decisions made a whole lot higher than my rank now that would make that happen. You know.
No, I don't. I think right now, no city has their own ambulance service. Right? It's all used through the county.
In Murfreesboro, that is correct. Now, your bigger cities, just like down the street, Nashville, they're metropolitan. So they have one fire department, they have one ambulance service that covers the whole Davidson County area. Well, it just makes sense to combine them, because you have a fire station here, we'll put an ambulance here, and we don't have to build another building.
Sure.
So usually in bigger cities or stuff like that, the EMS division or the EMS department is the division of the fire department.
Gotcha. And then here in Rutherford County itself, I guess because that's a county ambulance service and then you have a county fire department, they'll house them sometimes, I guess, at the same locations.
Yeah, they could do that together for the county. Correct. And but, and that you know, they got their new the fire station, public safety buildings, whatever they call them, they got a name for them, but they house fire and EMS in those new stations.
And then as far as the city, if the city needs an ambulance, they contact, of course, the county and then send it out from wherever the county is.
Yes. The now the county EMS has stations within our city, and just, you know, that's what I was going back to, cost efficiency. If we were together, like out on Thompson Lane, you got a fire station here, then a half mile down the road, you got an EMS station. You know, if we were metropolitan or together somehow, you could use one building to do both and save on cost.
Now, you hear, I know a number of years back, they talked about doing a metro form of government, but that never really caught on.
No. I think we're a long ways away from having that with some situations that's going on right now. But I don't.
That'd be a big undertaking.
It would. It would. You know, you got two forms of government, you know, right now, then you're going to have to combine and make one, you know, so it's a big, big thing to do.
I don't ever remember Nashville not being a metro. So, I, you know, when you look at cities like that, maybe it was in the 60s. I don't know when that happened.
I think it was back in the 70s. And, you know, there were some cities opt out. You remember you had, like, Bellevue.
Yeah.
They had their own little city within Davidson County, which they had to have their own fire department and police department. But I think, I'm not sure if Bellevue has, like, okay, we're going to be Davidson County, you know, we'll go into the metro form of government. There's a couple little cities like that in metro.
Berry Hill was one.
Yes, that's another one.
For some reason, I think Berry Hill still has their own
police
department.
They do.
But yeah, that's, I guess, rare and far in between.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that worked out when they decided to go metro. It's like, how do you opt out?
Yeah, because if you don't opt out, you've got a big expense, years ahead of you, because it's going to continue to grow. I mean, Nashville's not going anywhere. So
yeah.
Murfreesboro itself, what is the population? About 180?
I'm going to guess about 180. You know, we were trying to do the census last year. It's the way you get that information, it's basically just so hard to get now. And we were looking about 175 back then. I think that's what we thought we'd probably have. And that was going off our old census plus building codes, or not building codes, but building permits that had been issued. I think it's each residential or a building permit issued, they figure, I think it was 2.1 people would be in there. So that's where they got the number, thought it was going to go up. Or it has gone up, and that's what they were roughly thinking that it would be.
I think it's going to be harder and harder to do these census counts, because people, we've just gotten so accustomed to receiving, you know, these telemarketing phone calls. Yes. and knocks at the door. You naturally don't want to respond.
Exactly. When we kicked that off, I went out with a group one Saturday morning. We had some church groups and different ones coming in to help kick it off, go the door to door. And just walking down the neighborhood, I noticed it myself, there was a family sitting outside just enjoying the weather under the tree. And before we got to their house, they all went inside. Then when we knocked on the door, nobody come to the door. Yeah. And that's what the issues that we would face. And there was a lot of houses, like, you know, they're there. You saw them walk by, and they're not coming to the door. People don't want to do it.
Yeah, and even I do that. You know, I've gotten to that point where I don't want to fool some salesman at the door, because I don't know who you are.
Yeah,
I didn't invite you over, so I know it's not for me.
I got bombarded last weekend. It was I live close to high school, and I might have been the track team or something, but they were out selling stuff in the neighborhood. And they didn't have they just come over in groups. It's like the first group got me, I took care of that. Then it's like, here comes another group.
Yeah.
And it's like, Then another group come over, and I'm trying to do something in the yard. I thought, you know.
Like, so, it's my day off. I don't want to fool with this. Yeah. Yeah, I've been outside mowing before. Somebody will come by. I just act like I'm the yard boy, and I can't help you. I don't know. I don't know who
That's
lives
a good
here.
One.
But, yeah, that one and blacktopping your driveway. That's a knock at the door that, again, I try to avoid.
Yes.
I'm always fearful of scams, too, you know.
Exactly. You just don't know who you can trust nowadays.
Yeah. You want your money up front. What?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But what about the city giving away free smoke detectors? That's one that you guys used to go from door to door in certain neighborhoods.
We did. We've canvassed that pretty good now. That program has got to where if the word's out, if they need it, they'll give us a call.
Yeah.
And we still do that. We still get calls on a daily basis and go do that to some of our residents here in town.
Do the firemen enjoy doing that part of it?
They do. They do like get out in their neighborhoods that they're protecting and meet the people and talk with them. And, you know, and majority of the people that are getting these smoke detectors, they really needed them.
Yeah.
And needed assistance with them, you know, putting them up. And so they enjoy doing that.
You know, I remember when my kids were much younger, we would stop by the local fire department and say, you know, son, here's the firemen. This is what they do.
Yeah.
Do people still do that?
Yes, we have people stop by on pretty regular basis, you know. Of course, it's nothing's like it used to be, but
yeah.
Years ago when it was a lot slower, you know, we'd have more people come by, kids in neighborhoods hanging out. I mean, that's what I did when I was a kid. I lived across the street from Station 3. I would hang out with the firemen. But that's kind of went away, that part of it. But you still have people stop by, but it's now, you know, we're so busy, it's chances of catching us there are not, you know.
That's what I was going to say. As we continue to grow, it's harder to catch, you know, when the fire trucks are actually there.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's got to be everything's changed.
That's, you know, it's something I'm looking at right now, getting some data run. We have fire stations in good locations, and we can cover our territory, but we're getting to the point to where we're busy. That station is out running calls when another call comes in their station. So I'm looking how it's affecting us. Maybe to one day it might need to be a station that houses two units in it.
Yeah.
Because that district is so busy. It's the growth things you got to try to stay ahead of and look to the future of.
That's got to be tough. And then
it is.
On top of that, with houses getting bigger, it makes it a bigger response, really.
Yeah. And I sit here and you think about it, it's like, well, when is this going to stop? It's kind of, you know, like a gang. Or is it going to stop?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's like Station 10. We built that station being proactive. Then the economy changed in 07, 08. And there was a subdivision that was supposed to have 1,500 homes out there. It didn't happen. So we have a fire station sitting here, and all the growth permits have been pulled to go around in that area. It stopped. So we had a station that was built, and we just let it sit empty because there was nothing around it.
Which one is that, Station 10?
That's on Veterans Parkway, out there right off Highway 99. If you take a left, come down Veterans, it's right there by Armstrong Valley.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, now, that's been a few years ago. It's built up now. That station makes several calls now. But for first maybe 4 years that building was done, it just sat there.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
When a building sits there like that, once you do actually move in, are there changes you have to make? Are there upgrades you have to do, or is it stay in mint condition?
That building, when it was set, and we were still going and checking on it weekly, you know, running water, cleaning it up and everything. So when we did get ready to move in, it was very little we had to do to it.
Again, Murfreesboro Fire Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey with us this morning. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back. If you want to text in any questions, our number, 615-893-1450.
While you're Christmas shopping, Santa is on his way to Animal City. Stop in for pet photos on the 13th and 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting you to stop in with your pets to take some great photos with Santa Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Animal City, where happy pets begin.
This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. Demas has offered gift cards that you can get in any value. You know, those times where someone gives you gifts, you weren't really prepared. It's one of those things that's nice and easy to hand back out. but they're amazing gifts for teachers, for family and friends, and we always offer specials depending on how many gift cards that you get as well. You can go straight down to the restaurant, and our cashiers are happy to help you with any of those gift cards. Demas's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
It's time to dig through the trash the right way. Here's Rocky the Raccoon with today's Recycled Minute, courtesy of RecycleRightTN.com.
Hey neighbors, it's Rocky the Raccoon. Here's another idea on what you could do with all those plastic bottles you go through for drinking water. You could create an outdoor bowling set for the kids. You take 10 bottles or so and you fill them up with water or sand. Then you line them up in the driveway. Give the kids a ball and let them roll them right towards those water bottles. It's low-cost family fun that reuses plastic bottles and keeps little recyclers smiling. For RecycleRightTN.com, I'm Rocky the Raccoon.
And that's today's Recycled Minute with Rocky the Raccoon. Find the closest place to recycle near you by going to RecycleRightTN.com.
What do you like most about Adam's Place?
My apartment. I love my apartment. It's roomy and I've got lots of books and I've got room for everything and my little dog likes it, so we're happy in my apartment.
We're talking with Betty Kirksey.
The people are nice. Everybody that works here, I have found it. They're really nice.
I'm Terry Deal. Call me for more information about Adam's Place, located at 1927 Memorial Boulevard, across from Walmart.
Mark McCleskey, Fire Rescue Chief. I was looking at some of the text messages, and one says, holiday decoration safety, Christmas trees, Christmas lights. So I guess in regards to decorating for Christmas, are there any do's and don'ts?
You have a real tree, be sure to keep it watered. Don't let it dry out. And you know, the lights now, most of them are LEDs, which burn a lot cooler, if not no heat at all from them, and that's helped a lot. If you have some old Christmas lights.
Oh, the big bulbs. Yeah, I remember those.
It might be time to change those out. You know, over the years, those wires are very thin, wearing out, you know, could possibly short out and stuff. But the big thing is to be sure to keep that real tree watered.
Somebody asked about extension cords, I guess, going to the tree itself. Is that... Do those wires get hot too?
They can. You know, and here's the thing. Most people use those extension cords for just temporary use, but they're made as cheap as possible to carry the current. If you can, go ahead and get a little bit larger size of extension cord as far as the gauge of the wire. Keep it out of the way. You don't want to run it under a rug. That's where people, if you run it under a rug, every time you step on it, it's getting damaged. And yeah. I've seen fires come from underneath rugs where they kept stepping on the wire. Just kind of run that out of the way where people won't step in it, and just unplug it at night, you know, or be sure it's cut off. You know, don't leave it on all night.
I never even thought about it, but you're right. Most of those extension cords, they're for short-term projects. At least that's what they're designed for.
That's the reason they're so cheap. You know, you can buy a 10-foot extension cord for $3. It's because it's not much wire in it at all.
Yeah.
And the smaller the wire trying to carry that same amount of current, it will overheat.
I had one more question here asking about the roll-down fire ladders on the second and third floor of houses or apartments. Is that something that you recommend?
Yeah, any kind of something like that, you know, for their fire safety to help them get out of the second or third floor.
Fire Chief Mark McCleskey with us. We're already out of time. We got 10 seconds left. Went by fast. But thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, enjoyed it.